This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated July 21st, 2015. We'll begin this segment of the program by reading the obituaries. Rilla Lorraine Dobson Albert passed away the morning of July 19th at her home in Oakley. Services will be held at Cerro Gordo United Methodist Church with the visitation from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, July 22nd, and the funeral at 10 on Thursday, July 23rd. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery with military rites conducted by Cerro Gordo American Legion Post 117. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Memorials may be made to Cerro Gordo United Methodist Church, Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois, and DMH Hospice. Helen Bobby Park Bates, 90, of Shelbyville, formerly of Decatur and Mount Pulaski, died on July 17th at 7 a.m., at Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, July 23rd, at the Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski, with Mark Weber officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Burial at Steenbergen Cemetery, Mount Pulaski, will follow the service. Memorials may be made to the Mount Pulaski Phoenix Fire Department, Alzheimer's Association, or the family. Nelda Fern LeBegue, B-E-G-U-E, age 89, of Mount Zion, Illinois, and of Moroa, passed away Sunday, July 12th, at Heritage Health and Senior Care in Mount Zion, Illinois. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Wednesday at the Donnell Wiegand Funeral Home in Greenville. Interment will follow in Mount Auburn Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. until service time at the Donnell Wiegand Funeral Home in Greenville. Memorials may be made to the food pantry, Bond County Senior Citizens Center, or the First Christian Church. Michael Tuna McElroy, 63, Decatur, died Friday, July 17th. Mass of Christian burial, 11 a.m. Thursday in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation noon to 2 p.m. and 3 to 8 p.m. Wednesday in the church. Private burial at a later date. Memorials, St. Teresa High School Athletic Department. Arrangements by Moran and Gerbel Funeral Home. Harold H. Miller, 89, of Forsyth, passed away at 10:33 p.m. Saturday, July 18th, at Decatur Primrose. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Thursday, July 23rd at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Visitation will be 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at the funeral home. Burial will be at Harristown Cemetery, Harristown, Illinois, with military rites. Memorials may be made to Alzheimer's Association or American Cancer Society. Dale Francis Moeller, 63, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, July 18th, at home in Decatur. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. Let's read now this article about Mount Zion. Mount Zion to seek splash pad designs, and the writer is Ryan Voiles. While the concept has been in place for months, Mount Zion officials will now go look for design for a long-discussed splash pad. Village Administrator Julie Miller advised the board during its meeting Monday night that she would request proposals for the design and engineering for the proposed splash pad in Fletcher Park. "We have to get it designed no matter what we do, so this just gets us to the next step." Proposals for the splash pad, a family-friendly recreation area for water play that has little or no standing water, are due to the village offices by August 7th. The proposals would then be reviewed by staff and presented to the village board for final approval. "The board does not have to accept any proposals brought before it," Miller said. "Dimensions and the needs for the splash pad have yet to be determined, but the village is looking for proposals that would come in below the estimated cost of $300,000. The cost of the engineering work, along with the rest of the project, will be covered through donations, grants, and corporate sponsors." With the designs in place, Miller said it would be easier to ask for those grants as well as approach corporations for sponsorship. "I want something in my hand that says, here we are. This is where it's going to go," Miller said. "It won't take 24 months to turn around. I want something shovel-ready and ready to go." Officials hope to have a proposal in place for a vote in a few months. In other business, the board unanimously approved a policy that would reimburse village employees for work-related use on their personal cell phones. With the increased use of cell phones for village business, Miller said the village has a legal obligation to reimburse employees for the work they do on them. The standard monthly cell phone allowance will be $40 for standard cell phones and $60 for smartphones, with the village administrator having final approval on all cell phone allowances. All documents or electronic communication, whether texts or emails, are subject to the Freedom of Information Act if they relate to village business. All personal communications or records are not subject to the Act. Let's see now what the columnists and those who write blogs have to say. Here's a letter to Dr. Roach. "Dear Dr. Roach, heart attack still possible after triple bypass?" And the letter reads as follows. "My friend had a triple bypass last August. He still has problems. At a recent visit to the cardiologist, he was told that one of the grafts had fallen away. What does this mean? Where's that blood going? The doctor said he still has coronary heart disease, and they are trying new meds. What does this mean for him? Could he have another heart attack?" And the letter is signed with the initials PB. The response: "A coronary bypass surgery is the placement of a new blood vessel to allow blood to go around an obstruction in one of the vessels that supply the heart muscle with blood. The new blood vessel can be taken from the patient's own vein, usually the saphenous vein in the leg, or it can come from an artery, usually the left inferior mammary artery, LIMA. The new blood vessels are referred to as grafts. In a triple bypass, three grafts are created. These grafts improve blood flow to the heart and improve long-term survival for a subset of people with coronary artery disease. However, the grafts are subject to blockages themselves, either through blood clotting or from developing the same cholesterol and calcium plaques as the native coronary arteries. When a graft no longer carries blood, we usually say it has failed. But it sounds like your friend's cardiologist used the term fallen away. This doesn't mean the graft became unattached, a situation that would lead to death in seconds. That is something cardiac surgeons take care to prevent. Medications such as aspirin, beta blockers, and statins also reduce the risk of heart attack and death in people with coronary heart disease, especially when combined with a heart-healthy diet and a good exercise program. However, they only reduce the risk of, not completely prevent, a heart attack. A rough estimate is that 75% of people who undergo bypass surgery will be free of coronary events 5 years after surgery. Heart disease remains the number one killer. The booklet on clogged heart arteries explains why they happen and what can be done to prevent cloggings. Readers can obtain a copy by writing Dr. Roach in Orlando, Florida, and including a check for $4.75. Let's hear what Dear Abby's letter writers have to say. Dear Abby, concerned in Massachusetts, February 20th, used her status as a hospital employee to access her husband's medical records and found a history of STDs. I'm a registered nurse with 40 years' experience. Every healthcare organization I know of teaches all their employees about HIPAA violations and that accessing private patient medical information is a criminal offense. It is essential that patients know they can trust us to protect their privacy. We have specific policies against using one's employee status to access a relative's medical information. Concerned is lucky she still has a job. At my institution, she would be terminated for violating organizational policy and federal law. She wouldn't have to worry about how to broach the subject with her husband. She'd be explaining why she was fired. He may not be a saint, but neither is she. Her actions were unacceptable and reflect a clear lack of integrity and honesty. Signed, Safeguarding the Right to Privacy. Dear Safeguarding, thank you for your informed response. You are not the only reader who was appalled at what Concerned had done. Read on. Dear Abby, like Concerned husbands, I too am labeled at high risk for STDs based on a medical survey I completed. Although I have had a monogamous 30-year marriage and do not do drugs of any kind, in that survey they asked how many partners I had in my lifetime. Those few other partners were before I met my wife. Concerned indicated that her husband had been treated twice for STDs some years back. What does that mean? Were they married then? If not, is he labeled high risk due to his previous behavior? Perhaps there is something deeper in the relationship that needs addressing, such as why there are weeks between sexual contact with her husband. It's ironic that she's bent out of shape over infidelity concerns, but thinks it's acceptable to betray the privacy and ethics rules governing medical professionals. Signed, Vincent in West Virginia. Here's another article on a different subject. Dear Abby, young at heart in Texas, February 9th, could have written my story. I am also a 70-year-old man who is sexually dysfunctional. I, too, was lonely, having outlived two of my brides. However, I did find someone who appreciates holding hands and whispering sweet words without more physical contact. Abby, you said, not only do I think you can find companionship, I suspect you may need police protection to control the crowd of applicants. Years ago, my aunt, the late Ann Landers, polled her female readers asking if they would prefer holding and cuddling to actually doing the deed. The majority of them answered in the affirmative. My first wife died of a heart attack after 30 years of marriage. My second wife died after 8 years of marriage of kidney cancer. At 71, I married my third wife, a wonderful woman just as you both describe. She was my next-door neighbor. We have been married 3 years and 9 months. The Bible says, love thy neighbor so I married her. We also enjoyed cuddling even without doing the deed. So I say to young at heart in Texas, yes, you can find a woman such as you and Abby describe, and when you do, I suggest you rub her back often. Women love it. Signed, Young at Heart in Colorado. Her answer, dear Young at Heart, I'm glad your story had a happy ending, and I'm crossing my fingers that Young at Hearts will too. Thanks for writing to encourage him. Tim Kaine, H&R Entertainment Editor, offers this blog post, and the headline is hashtag reboot the suit question mark. This morning's story about the Kickstarter campaign started by the National Air and Space Museum to preserve astronaut Neil Armstrong's spacesuit touches on many of my favorite things about being alive, and I'm not sure how I feel about how it all fits together. Number one, the suit. The suit Neil Armstrong wore as he was the first human to set foot on the moon is not on display. It's in storage. The suits were made to be disposable. We're probably fortunate that a few people were smart enough to show concern and take care of the suit to this point. The museum wants to build something to hold and preserve the suit so it can be seen and still be protected. There will also be 3D scanning to aid in further preservation. Number two, the Kickstarter. The National Air and Space Museum has a $1.3 billion annual budget. It's also in the midst of a 7-year, $1.5 billion fundraising project. For the Armstrong suit, the museum has turned to Kickstarter, where it is asking funders to provide $500,000 in 30 days. As is always the case with Kickstarter, if the goal isn't reached, the museum gets nothing, and everyone who pledged is not charged for their pledge. Number three, the dilemma. Kickstarter is the most democratic and fair of fundraisers from both sides. I've never been burned by the site, although I can imagine times when I might have been. If people want to support a project, they vote with their wallet and with an amount. I've backed some projects that didn't make, and those shortcomings were disappointing. But lessons were learned by me and the people putting on the Kickstarter. I was never as upset at the big money Kickstarter attempts by producers of the TV show Veronica Mars, trying to make a movie, and actor, writer, director Zach Braff. I wasn't interested in funding either of their efforts, but when recording artist Jill Sobule asked for financial support from her fans, I was right on board. It wasn't a Kickstarter campaign, but the idea for me was the same. The point is to allow the artist to make the decisions they want and present the audience with the final work. If it takes advance funding for that artistic freedom, I can't be on board with everyone, but I can help the ones I really want to help. But the National Air and Space Museum is a branch of the Smithsonian and is taxpayer-funded, as noted above, to the tune of more than $1 billion annually. Some potential contributors and some angry citizens are pointing out they already support the museum because they pay taxes. What baffles me is why the museum has to ask for what would be a 0.04% of its budget to be funded in this way. It's like someone with $130 begging for a nickel. That's how the math works out. What else is being funded by the museum that's more important than the Armstrong suit? Especially if the Armstrong suit is as deserving as the social media push the museum is giving it. Hashtag reboot the suit is the Twitter hashtag, Make Up Your Own Mind. We have a new headline. This was posted 28 minutes ago by Edith Brady, Lunny Lee News Service, and the dateline is Bloomington. The X and the headline is Arrest Made in Zimmerman Homicide. The ex-husband of a Bloomington woman murdered in her office in November has been taken into custody in connection with her death. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers told the Pantograph Tuesday that Kirk Zimmerman was taken into custody at 7 a.m. by Bloomington police. A press conference is expected to be held later today where authorities will disclose details of the arrest. The 56-year-old suspect will formally face charges in McLean County Court on Wednesday, said Chambers. Pam Zimmerman was found dead in her office at 2103 East Washington Street by police sent there to check on her well-being, as requested by a friend. Autopsy reports show that she had been shot multiple times. The arrest follows an 8-month investigation by Bloomington police and the state's attorney's office. The victim, a financial planner, was the divorced mother of three children. She and Zimmerman divorced in 2012 after 20 years of marriage and lived within blocks of each other on the city's northeast side. This story will be updated. Another news bulletin. This one is datelined Gridley. One dead after U.S. 24 accident. One person is dead after a two-vehicle accident Tuesday morning on U.S. 24 just west of the McLean-Livingston County line. No other injuries were reported. Illinois State Police said the accident involved a semi and a motorcycle. The road remains closed until accident reconstructionists have completed their work. The accident was reported at 6:48 a.m. This story will be updated. We'll read now a blog post by Dick Zaker, H&R Senior Copy Editor. Headlined, Despite What You've Heard, Andy Griffith Lives On. Aw, shucks, we were just confused is all. That's the best explanation I know of as to how Andy Griffith died twice. Earlier this year, the internet picked up on news of the beloved TV star's death. My adult daughter scolded us gently for not telling her. Trouble was, Griffith had passed away 3 years ago. It was in all the papers, as we used to say, but she was so stirred by this news flash that we doubted our own memories. Well, we've already started to look into Matlock's life for a Smarty Pants quiz and weren't about to waste good research. Andy Griffith's show lives on in reruns as a symbol of warm, gentle goodness. I did not know he had introduced the Sheriff Andy Taylor character way back in 1953 on Danny Thomas's Make Room for Daddy. But the path to Mayberry was a winding one indeed. Young Andy enrolled in college with a mind to be a preacher. Along the way, the theater bug hit him, and he earned a degree in music. He married a woman with similar interests, and they developed an act. Besides the singing and dancing, Griffith wrote funny monologues. One of them was a rural woodsman's bewilderment with the rules of football. That routine, released in 1953, became a hit. More success came when he starred in the theatrical production and later film version of No Time for Sergeants. It was in that movie that he worked with Don Knotts for the first time. Don't worry, this won't be a whole recitation of his career. Just to note that he received Tony Award nominations with two of his first roles. He wasn't exactly unheard of when his TV show hit the screen. It's remarkable when an actor attains an iconic TV show, film, or play, to then come back 18 years later and have another series that lasts 9 years is remarkable. What you may not know is that Griffith had to overcome a serious sickness in between. Guillain-Barré syndrome, a crippling muscular disease, left him paralyzed for months. Rehabilitation allowed him to resume his career. And for all the times I watched The Andy Griffith Show, I didn't remember that Barney Fife was his cousin. After Matlock, Griffith brought his career full circle by recording several gospel music albums. He won a Grammy in 1997 for Best Southern Gospel, Country Gospel, or Bluegrass Gospel Album. Further, he was inducted into the Christian Music Hall of Fame and Museum in 2007. So there may have been confusion about whether Andy Griffith was dead, but his place in American culture is secure. A next headline says, Ag Director Seeks Federal Aid with Crops, Dateline Bloomington, written by Kevin Barlow. Seeing plenty of fields with standing water and damaged crops as he headed to Bloomington on Monday, Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Philip Nelson said he will seek federal disaster designation for damaged crops. There are really a lot of drowned out areas, he said in an address to McLean County Republicans on Monday. There is a lot of damage throughout the state, including here in McLean County. Such a designation would allow farmers to apply for low-interest loans, he said. We are still assessing the damage, but we know there is quite a bit. Following his visit, Nelson joined the other state officials in touring flooded fields in Iroquois County, where more than 11 inches of rain have fallen in the past month. Folks on the ground have indicated that approximately 40% of the crops in Iroquois County are underwater. The Illinois Department of Ag will be working with the Farm Service Agency to secure secretarial disaster designation for portions of the state affected by the recent rains and flooding. Emergency loans are typically the first form of assistance, but the designation could trigger other programs. Right now, we're in the assessment stage where farmers are working with their county Farm Service Agency reps to determine the extent of damage to their farms. Abraham Lincoln had it right when he was president, he said. Agriculture is the backbone of this county. Agriculture is the backbone of this state. When you spend 10 cents of every disposable dollar for food, that is the best bargain on the face of this earth. About 23% of our nationwide economy is dependent on agriculture. It's very important that we try to inject some common sense back into some of the decisions of the federal government that affects farmers. Nelson also called for the development of more infrastructure in Illinois. I think Bruce Rauner believes that we have got to spend money on infrastructure if we are going to turn our financial problems around, he said. I agree with that because it would benefit our farmers, particularly those that spend a lot of money on electricity. This has been Carol Bond with the July 21st issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again.